Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time to bring back the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. What's up, goddess of grains, Angie Setzer?
Just living the dream, sitting here hearing about how much it's raining in the Eastern Corn Belt and watching the market fight with itself. So, well, you know, the joys of a commodity trader these last few weeks.
Well, you know, they got to have some fun. So what does the rain mean? What does it mean to you? That's what I want. I don't care. What does it mean?
To me, I mean, I wasn't too concerned about it throughout much of April. And really last week when they started talking about things drying out, I kind of thought, okay, well, that's fine. If the weather pattern shifts and we see things turn dry, there's plenty of time to get the crop in and still, you know, kind of perform at an optimal level if the weather cooperates the rest of the growing season. Because planting date doesn't really, I mean, it matters. It starts to matter once you get later in the Corn Belt, like south of I-80, you know, after May 10th, a lot of times, or at least the University of Purdue said that, you know, you start to see some of that high-end yield potential drop off. So to me, really, though, you know, we're going to get the crop planted. I don't even doubt that we'll get the majority of it, but the last couple million acres, you know, 3 million acres or so, could make a huge difference in ending stock once we get to the end of the growing season here.
So what is the deadline to get in?
To be honest, there really isn't a deadline. I mean, you can plant, of course, July 1st, you know what I mean? But you can plant, there's places where you can plant corn into mid-June. The biggest thing is it's not a deadline, meaning you can no longer plant. It's a decision that the farmer has to make in the standpoint of, will my yield loss outweigh, you know, is it better for me to take preventative plant? Is it better for me to put soybeans in? You know, things of that nature start to come about when there is true concern that you could experience, you know, relatively decent yield loss, which is kind of something that a lot of guys won't really consider until late May. But at this point, if the weather pattern holds, it could be late May before guys are able to make decisions, and maybe not. It could dry out the end of next week. And I think that's the problem with the market right now is you can never really trust a wet weather rally because, you know, it's benefiting the majority of the land out there. I mean, you have your flooding and you have your severe issues, but a lot of folks will tell you, you know, for all of the drowned out spots in a field, you know, if it's only 5 to 10% even drown out or something, you got 90% that's achieving great conditions because it's getting the moisture it needs. The problem is I've never seen, or at least at this point, I don't want to say I've never seen because I very well could have. It just doesn't stick in my mind. You know, the wet weather this early on fields that have just been planted. So I don't know what that'll mean for a lot of growers either. Really? Okay. So I guess the question marks are just greater than anything else.
that would make sense, but we're not, the grains aren't exactly flying. I mean, you know, they're not exactly, mm-mm, you know, rip roaring. I mean, I think the commodities are kind of depressed in here still. And, you know, I think you and I still both agree that we're going to see at least higher prices in corn and wheat. Is that still the case?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think that's what I have to understand. For me as a trader, like these are the times that you experience, you know, the most frustration, I would say, where you feel like you're taking your educated opinion and you're looking at what's going on and you're saying fundamentally this thing should have some juice to it. But then you have to recognize, you know, like you said, the outside commodity impacts. I mean, there's people that are talking now that and, you know, we've kind of chatted about it a little bit, but it's one of those things where people are talking, well, maybe inflation doesn't exist anymore. I don't know if I buy that. I understand that, you know, the things that we've been doing from monetary policy standpoint should indicate something in that regard, right? I mean, you're the expert on that side. I'm just the girl that trades grain. But so that's the frustrating part right now is the commodity market is not really one that anyone wants to bet on.
Well, my case for that would be that, you know, because the equities are pathetically strong because, you know, there's no volume. I mean, it's a brutal trade from an equity standpoint. But typically, other than consumption for food and other than, you know, farmers, you know, trading back and forth and doing their thing to protect, you know, the grain markets and all agricultural markets have a lot of dependent on, you know, alternative investment strategies. And, you know, right now, as the investors chase yield, they're not trying to get the corn yield. They're trying to get the money yield. And of course, they're chasing it in the equity markets. And, you know, that's, of course, my theory will be that the money will start to flow out and into commodities. But in the meantime, you know, inflation is non-existent except for the artificial inflation that the Federal Reserve tries to create. So at the end of the day, you know, we're kind of languishing here at prices that we've seen, you know, forever. I mean, they've always been cheap and you know, still relatively cheap. And I think it's probably from an investor standpoint, in my mind, I mean, you know, probably the grain markets are probably a great spot to be an investor right now for looking for a long-term gain. What do you think?
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. And so that's the other factor that I keep looking at and I keep telling myself, you know, because we've been talking about the expectation of a corn and wheat rally for quite some time. I mean, we've been talking about that from a fundamental attitude perspective on, you know, the outside money looking in and things like that. And I agree with that 100%. You know, and now we have an extra twist. So I've been expecting some sort of rally for months now, it feels like. I mean, and we've seen them. We can't say we can't discredit the fact that, you know, July corn not long ago had a 45-cent rally. I mean, that you can't poo-poo a 15% gain in grains in the current situation that we're in. But now we have the secondary, you know, weather impact to the potential crop. And so I just sit here and listen to, you know, Tom Petty, the waiting's the hardest part. And I wait for the money to flow out and start to move into grains, because to me, it makes sense from an investment standpoint, especially with the risk that we're facing right now with potential production loss this year.
No, and again, I agree with that. So what I'm looking at, though, is, you know me, I don't look at much of the fundamentals. I really just kind of watch the money. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that if you try to play the weather, you try to play some of those other issues, you end up getting a little bit of egg on your face, because typically you're chasing the crowd and the crowd is always wrong. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. By the time it's clear that this is a good investment, we'll probably have run its course, you know, unless we see a significant loss, you know, five to 7 million acres. And so, and maybe that's the wrong way to say it. I don't want to say by the time it's clear, because I think it's relatively clear that it could be. But like you said, once the flooding's on CNBC or whatever, it's the old adage of, you know, as soon as you see your trade, at least in commodities, maybe no one else talks about this, but because CNBC talks about other things. But the minute you see cattle on CNBC, you pretty much got to feel, you know, if they're talking about a bull or a bear market or something of that nature in any grain or meat, you call that your top. I mean, you know what I mean?
Top or bottom. I got to get you back. We got to go to a break here, but we'll finish this up because it is important and you're bringing up some extremely important facts that everybody needs to understand. This is the Bubba Show. We are with the goddess herself, my friend, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. And, of course, make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge that is run by Xander. And, of course, the last but not least is go to bubbatrading.com and check out Bubba's Bottom Line, my brand new, soon-to-be Emmy Award-winning podcast. This is the Bubba Show, Top Bubba Horse. We'll be right back with Angie Setzer after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, at goddess of grains on Twitter, and of course, vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So you were talking about the common theme, which is always when you see it in the headlines or when you see it places you shouldn't be seeing it, that is usually the end of that market, whether it be a rally or a sell-off. And of course, go ahead and finish that thought, because I think it's important that everybody understands how a real trader thinks about when they see that type of information.
Oh, yeah. Really, when it comes down to it, it's a futures market. And I kind of hate when people say that, but I find myself saying it because it's true. You know what I mean? It's a futures market. So at this point in time, we're looking at what potentially could happen in the future. And to me right now, I think we could see some significant production loss. Now, we have to remember, and I don't want to make everyone all you know, crazy bulled up, like sound like we're going back to $5 or $6 in corn or something like that, because I don't anticipate that, just because we have such a large Brazilian crop that right now the Brazilian farmer's not going to get much for. And so any sort of real rally will probably encourage a flow of grain out of their country and kind of impact our exports, which in turn lowers demand and could increase carryout. But that's a 6-month process, not a 6-day. But from an overall standpoint, yeah, once you start to see, flooding concerns or something like that in an actual article or a news run on, you know, this is why cattle has to go higher, that's generally when you start to, you know, exit stage right sort of deal. And so that's one of the things that we'll watch for. And right now, I think I've read my share of why the market should trade lower articles and heard why the market should trade lower. So I think we're hitting the point of peak bull shaming is what I call it, where if you come up with anything, no matter how commonsensical, that could be remotely against the flow of the market right now, which in grains, of course, is bearish, you have to be a moron. So I call that bull shaming, or there's bear shaming too, of course, in the middle of a rally. But so we're watching that right now, and I anticipate just with that sort of flow and paying attention to that side of things too, we should be working our way towards a higher trade here. But I guess we'll see what, if anyone wants to buy it or not.
Well, I think, again, I'm in agreement with you on the higher movement. I think the only real problem probably will be in soybeans, but again, I don't expect what some of the experts are calling, you know, for $7 or $6 soybeans. We talked about that last time. I mean, you know, maybe we'll be at 940. I don't think they're going a hell of a lot lower from here. I just don't know if they're going to go higher from here. You know, I would expect to see a $10 print and see what happens from there. But again, I think we get too much involved with our own opinion and try to interpret, you know, as you know, because you are a trader yourself, traders tend to try to twist the news to what they're thinking and try to put their opinion into the news, which is actually the wrong way to do it. Correct. It would be the right way to do it is let the news play out or let the markets play out, and the market should tell you what to do next. And many of us try not to, many of us don't do that all the time. And that's where we find ourselves in a lot of trouble. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I agree. You know, I have a friend that I talk to that's a tech trader, very, very short term. I mean, he literally will watch one move and you know, will dictate or make his decisions based on that. And I swear he's in and out of positions very quickly. You know, a scalper, I guess, if you will. Is that a bad word? You're a trader. Like, I'm just an elevator person. Like, if you call someone a scalper, it's okay, right? You can.
Actually, the facts of the matter are is that in the original days of market making, and when we didn't have all these computers, we had actually guys down there. Many guys made a very nice living just scalping the market, because really, the market itself, and you know, when you go to the floors, is scalpers are the ones are a true market maker is really a scalper. If you're really a market maker, you're really a scalper, because what you're really doing is you're providing liquidity, giving a bid and an offer on every trade that comes in. And your goal is to sell the offer and buy the bid. So in the old days, you know, when corn was trading, or when they traded in fractions. So corn is 361 and a quarter to 361 and a half. So my goal was a buyer order comes in, I sell them at a half. A seller comes in, I buy them back at a quarter. I make my money and I'm done. That's it. That's a true market maker. So that's actually a great way to trade. Unfortunately, that with the price of commissions today, and you know, not much. You know, if you're not on the floor, you can't really scalp because you can't overcome the cost.
Yeah. And well, that's why. And I mean, for this particular guy, he's working, depending on the trade, to make anywhere from three to five or whatever it may be. And I'm not sure on the, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but he amazes me just to watch him. But he's very much, you know, like it's just one of those things where he'll pay attention and then he'll say, okay, well, this is a bad trade for corn. This, that, blah, blah, blah. And it's, for me, I'm a longer term person, I guess. So it's hard to, keep seeing these things that tell me that the market should be doing the opposite. And then he can tell me the poorer trades, you know? And so here we are, we just keep sitting, watching the market grind at this point. And no, I don't see why soybeans would have to go down either. And from a spread standpoint, you know, it's very possible to basically see corn get bought in and that spread between corn and soy tighten without soybeans really moving. You know, everyone talks, well, corn has to rally and soybeans have to sell off to bring that spread in. Well, no, corn can come up a bit and beans can stay relatively flat and that still works, you know, so it'll be something that we're paying attention to for sure.
Now, would you say that you are a trader or you're more of a hedger?
I'm a hedger.
Right.
100% a hedger. But I mean, I'm also, because I have to manage anything I buy, I sell, you know, and I'm a basis trader. I make money on, the difference between the cash price and futures, making my margin there.
Do you speculate
I have
at all,
to trade
honey?
Too, you know.
Do any speculating? You ever take a flyer in there?
Oh, we have. Yeah, I have. You know, there's a few times where you look at it and you're like, most of the time it's a known risk. Like, let's take a look at some calls. Or something like that. We have done some things, experiments, you could say, you know, my boss is really good about coming up with something and most of the time it can work. But then you usually take the bruises too, right along with it. So I've learned some stuff on that, you know, for instance, heating oil and diesel works until it doesn't. So we've done that, hedging our fuel costs that way, which was funny. But I mean, it worked out for us because we were able to lock in the physical cheaper, but the experience in the meantime on the future side for my boss was an eye opener, I think. So, you know, just fun things like that where you hedge, we're hedging, but my trades, you know, when I basis is heavily influenced by what futures are doing, because the higher the futures, the more grain moves into the pipeline. So for instance, right now for me, I think the basis value is probably at the best for corn that we'll see here until the end of June. And my vote is futures are going to rally. So I have to make a decision and trade that basis, you know, which I have and wait and hope that I'm not wrong.
Well, I mean, you know, if you were never wrong, you'd never, you know, there'd be no need for us, right? I mean, that's the whole,
right?
You have to be able to look at it. No, but I mean, I you know, there is a lot of great trades you can make in a lot of great markets, and of course, you know, that's one of the things that has made the airlines able to be find profitability. Is because what they finally learned after, you know, 1,000 years of going bankrupt, that if you hedge the cost of your fuel, at least you know what it costs you to fill a receipt. And of course, that is why Southwest was always successful and the others were not. And the others have learned and joined in on that party and have become, you know, hedgers of oil. And that is always, you know, look, you know, I've said, and I will continue to say so, that, you know, I want my farmers and producers to hedge oil, their input costs, but not until, I mean, I think we're going to 40. So why should I buy it here?
Yeah.
I it's going to go lower. Anyways, we are with Angie Setzer, the goddess herself, who graces us on this Wednesday. And of course, we're going to step out here for a break, but make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download The Bubba Show every day. And of course, you get the Sporting Edge with Xander, and they're really kicking. They're kicking it pretty good there. They're getting all kinds of big stars on there. So make sure you check that out. And of course, BubbaTrading.com is, you know, where you can go to find out all the programs they work. And of course, my soon to be Emmy award winning Bubba's Bottom Line is there available for you too. We'll be back with Angie Setzer, the goddess herself, Vice President of Grain Assistant Elevator, right here at The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Boris will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Chalady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizen Elevator, and also the one who's going to get me on Iowa TV. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. That's what, come on. It's fun.
So, all right. So, you know, we've got markets, and I saw something interesting last week, and I want to get your take. You know, wheat was like, possessed. It was up 21, down 15, you know, really wild, and looks a little bit snarky right now, but I still think wheat's going to be really good. What's your take of that action, and what's your take of wheat itself?
Wheat itself, well, the take of the action last week was all because we didn't know what was the extent of the damage on the bulk of the Kansas wheat crop. We still don't know. So that's one of the problems that we have is we came in on Monday, and experienced in some portions of the Kansas, and to put it in perspective, when you hear people talk about Kansas, and wheat, they produce one out of every five bushels the U.S. produces. So they're a pretty major U.S. producer, Kansas is. And, you know, a lot of times how goes Kansas goes the wheat market. So we came in Monday morning last week and had discovered that, you know, 2 feet of snow had fallen, very heavy, wet snow. And, a lot of people were reporting that the wheat had been snapped off. It had been laid down. It had been this, it had been that, not to mention it had been frozen the day prior. You know, that the lows had dropped into the 30s with the wheat headed out, which is, it will damage, your yield potential to experience a freeze like that. So we came in on Monday with the idea, you know, that losing wheat production was going to be a major thing. And we also came in, you know, to stories of flooding in Illinois and places like that. So the corn market, the wheat market, the bean market, were all up huge that day. And I thought we were finally seeing, fundamentals come to fruition because, you know, we did lose a significant portion. I mean, the Kansas wheat tour came out and has knocked, you know, 250 million bushel or 200 million bushel off from the Kansas wheat crop. But the market went back to its old bearish standby here. And, all of a sudden decided that didn't matter because we have a lot of wheat. You know, you kept hearing the same, we have a lot of wheat. And then the Kansas wheat tour came out. And basically, like I said, dropped overall production by 200 million, but apparently, in this establishment right now in these markets, you have to completely destroy the crop before anyone thinks it matters. So, we saw the wheat market back off, failed on some technical levels, and now here we are probably testing, but imagine on the July, the low 420s, 423, range first and see where that goes. But, you know, from an overall standpoint here, that crop's been hurt. Spring wheat planting is slow if it's went in, so that's probably going to reduce things. And the South Red Wheat Belt has not been, you know, a sign of perfect production, not to mention the France crop is rated lower than where it was a year ago, and there's some dry conditions in Russia. You know, so to me, I think the problem with wheat is that it's very difficult to tell what the yield's going to be on a crop. And so right now, everyone's just had their butts handed to them the last couple years on guessing on a wheat failure. You know, I guess we're going to have to wait until harvest starts and people start telling, you know, accurate, probably very low results before anyone really, you know, starts to give a damn, unfortunately. But, you know, the thing with wheat is everyone keeps pointing out how much is available globally. China's sitting on 48% of the shit, you know? They're the ones that are sitting on the bulk of wheat, and as someone who's personally stored wheat before in our elevators, it's not the easiest crop to keep, you know, happy and buck free. So Godspeed for them on how the, you know, several billion bushel of wheat that they're sitting on is storing.
So, but okay, so let's go back to my theory. I mean, you're more, you know, I'm really, I'm a speculator. I'm a pure speculator.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the industry, but, you know, and I've been on farms. In fact, you know, my family, my mom's family were farmers in Wisconsin. So, you know, I get the whole picture, but I'm a guy that just believes in to follow the flow of money and forget about all the other nonsense, because to me, it doesn't mean anything from my perspective. Okay, but you refer to it a lot. So when you're deciding on what to do, do those things weigh into your decision, because you're looking at what China's holding, or what's coming out of Brazil, or what's coming out of my nose, or whatever? I mean, does that stuff make any difference to you? Or when you're making, so it's explained to me, to everybody, how you handle that and what that all means to you.
Well, what that means to me, I mean, from an overall standpoint, there's multi-layers that I trade, because I'm a cash trader. Do you want me to go that far in, or do you just want me to go in how I make the decision on?
You can go all the way back, baby. Cash it.
That's because, well, you know, with us yesterday, for instance, we experienced a frost in Michigan, and my boss, the owner of the elevator, is an agronomist. So his job is to, you know, pay attention to how the crop is growing and make decisions on that size and stuff like that. And he called me yesterday and said to hold off on making any new crop sales, which I wasn't planning on anyway. I mean, we're carrying old crop forward because we know it's good quality and the carries there in the wheat market. So if, for instance, in a weather situation like that, my first thing is, what am I locally going to do? What am I going to do with my physical holdings? And then the second thing is when my customers call in, you know, and want to know what to do, then we make that determination. We think that both basis and futures will improve. So we're not going to make any sales right now. We'll wait and see what the crop looks like and things of that nature. And then on the other side, you know, in the futures market for me, since I'm not having to hedge anything, because the farmer isn't selling and I'm not selling, my main focus is what the spreads are doing. And if I'm bullish wheat, then I have concern that spread could disappear. And so I'll probably be locking in my carry on the market. So I'll be buying the nearby and selling the deferred and rolling my position out to pay me to store the stuff once we harvest it.
Okay. So, you know, so you look at the picture, and of course, obviously there's a lot of science and art to what you do and figuring it out. And what would be the maximum of any crop you would ever hedge?
For me, at one time or just overall?
Well, I mean, in other words,
I handle, me personally, I'm responsible for over 12 million bushels. So I hedge on both sides. I'll short it when I buy it and buy it when I sell it.
Right, but I mean, like, if I'm farmer Bubba, and I come to you and I say, you know, I want to protect my crops or whatever, and you know, you'd say to me, well, we should hedge 100% of it, we should hedge 75%, we should hedge 50%. How do you go about doing that?
It always depends on the time of year, but for like right now, I wouldn't want to see my customers more than 50% sold on corn or on beans and 40% sold on corn. And at this point in time, if the market had given us, these are all numbers, if the market had given us the opportunities we're hoping for, you know, between around 440 on the high end on corn, and most of my customers are 50-60% hedged above $10 on beans, which is way more aggressive than what we traditionally are this time of year. But I think the bean market's going much lower. But until the crop is planted, I mean, if the crop is being harvested and a guy can tell me that his yields are above what they normally have been or whatever, and he has to move everything right then, I have no problem with him being 100% hedged on expected production if the market's in a good spot and he's making money. But at this point in the year, we don't like to get much above, you know, 40-50%, just in case there is a production issue in the market. You know, for one, if there's a production issue and they can't meet their contracts, because that is a concern, because you have to deliver physical on everything. And or if the market were to go higher, you know, going into the seasonal uptrend part of the year. Right now, I don't want them to be too crazy with what they're having.
Well, I mean, obviously, you want to leave room for the upside. You never know when you're going to get a big market. Mm-hmm. Plus, you want to keep them away from getting their whatchamacallit squeezed off in case there's a problem, right?
Yeah.
Well,
never any fun.
Well, no, I mean, when you're chasing it, it becomes very difficult, and that's why you have to measure everything that you do, based on that. So, What do you see the next big, is there a next big report that's important to you? I mean, I really don't care about reports myself. I never even look at them, but is there one that's important to you?
And to me, the most important one to me next is the June 30th report. I think everything in between is somewhat noise, but we'll get one out on Wednesday of quarterly stocks. It'll be the first indication of new crop supply and demand expectations from the USDA. Everyone else seems way more excited than I am. I'm just kind of like, okay, we know acres. We know they're going to use trend line. We know they'll probably adjust export demand a little lower, probably offset it with, ethanol and feed demand on the corn side. Soybean demand may be lowered a bit overall kind of deal, but it's not anything that's going to be a super crazy surprise, which will be funny because this could air on Thursday and it was a crazy surprise. So I guess at that point, hi. God knows what the USDA is going to do, but
they're full of crap anyways.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to me, at this point in the game, it's going to change a bajillion times. Everyone will be paying attention to that. They'll be talking about it. It may give us some short-term market direction. We'll have another one in June. Woo. But really, when it comes down to it, what's going to matter to me will be what June 30th, the acreage and quarterly stocks, because it'll give us an indication on, what's actually out there supply-wise on the farm and off. And then we'll also see what the USDA is going to use for acres.
Hold that thought. This is the Bubba Show, Tom Bob Horowitz with Angie Sester, the goddess of grains. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back after the break with more. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess herself and vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, we were kind of going back and forth on reports, and to me, the reports are, first of all, they're immaterial, in my opinion. They shouldn't drive price because, again, in today's world, the big funds, the big firms, they already know what this report's going to be. They've already done all the calculations that the USDA puts together to make these reports. And the USDA reports, in my opinion, are never all that accurate to begin with because they don't use the entire circumstance. They kind of take it in from a couple different areas and they kind of multiply that out, which I think is a bunch of horse, but you tell me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I used to be somewhat starry-eyed where I'd get really excited about the USDA reports and what they could mean. And, there's still some direction they're going to give us, but it's mainly the only direction I really seek from them anymore is acreage, this early at least. I mean, their guess is as good as anyone's on what the actual yield will look like, let alone demand. So it's kind of funny to me that people put a bunch of credence into this. Of course, I'll still be glued to the screen at 11 a.m. and still experience a little bit of excitement just because it can be a market mover. We've experienced things in the past. I think it's like a Pavlovian. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where you've been so excited about it that you are, but really overall, it's not going to mean a whole lot.
No, I agree with you. I mean, listen, I understand the reports, but what I can tell you from the equity side and from all sides is that as technology gets better, as every farmer, mm-hmm. every producer, every salesperson, every trader carries a computer in their pocket. I go back when I first started, you weren't even born yet. Okay. And we go back. If you remember the movie Trading Places, okay. When they came out with the orange juice report. Right. And at 9 o'clock, the whole floor stopped. Right. Everybody quiet. Yeah. And there was like one big, huge TV that everybody looked at. Right. Well, when I traded, we had 45 traders through our clearing firm. We had one little 800 pounds, 12-inch green screen, LED, whatever it was back in those days, when the money supply came out, when the jobs numbers came out, because the markets weren't trading 24 hours a day, all right? So all of this is now nonsense because, again, these firms pay millions and millions of dollars to kind of calculate these reports out, because the information that compiles the reports is already out. It just has to be put together.
Well, yeah, I can tell you, we, just before they completely shut down the floor, we went down, excuse me, and watched the report be released September 11th, I think, 2014 was the date on it, somewhere around there. It was a September report in 2014, and there was like five people and a goat wandering around, and, you know, everyone did stop. The options were still trading, you know, pretty heavy. But that is, it's options. It wasn't the actual pits themselves. And it was kind of depressing to see, because I had seen it when everything was really crazy and wild. And then to see it then, you know, and that's kind of the perfect, picture of what actually, how the market reacts anymore to these reports. You may see some big swings in price, just on algorithms getting tripped by different numbers or whatever, but that's about it. You know, everyone kind of knows what to expect. The USDA can surprise us every now and again, but overall, you know, the real truth is overall, the government has the real numbers through crop insurance and things like that. So it really isn't a surprise overall, you know, sadly, with whatever they're going to come out with.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the livestock. We kind of ignored that stuff, but obviously,
the
cattle markets are insane. Well, you know, I think the tops are now, and I think they get a little bit ugly from here. Do you have any thought?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think we found the high side of the range. I'm not necessarily in the mindset to where this thing's going to tank straight lower like cattle have done in the past. I mean, of course, it'll depend on a lot of things, but I've got to watch and see. The cash market just doesn't seem to want to cool down yet. So I'm waiting to see if Packers back away, or if they, you know, if you start to see their bids start to drop pretty significantly, then I'll be convinced that the market needs to move lower. I think feeders rallying was kind of the sign of you knew you were going to kind of run out of time once you saw feeders get to the point where you were spending, you know, $140 on a feeder and going to, we weren't going to be anywhere near what you needed to be to make money on it in the end with where the live or the fats were trading. So I'll be paying attention to the cash side really before I say it's over, but I think we've probably found the extent of the upward move, and I wouldn't get in the way of it right now while we try to seek support. You know how it is.
I'm your
resistance, and you know,
I'm calling it over
sometimes.
I'm calling it over. I was wrong. I got tortured, because I tried to sell them earlier, and then I said, okay, what we got to wait for is for one final blow off to the upside. I think that was last Thursday. And I think when it came off, I think that was the trick. And I think now they're going to, I think what traders need to look for now, in my opinion, is you want to look for every market that opens higher. You want to sell into it.
Yeah, to sell off.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you're going to.
And that's what everyone's doing right now. I mean, that's just a common, even in grains, that's the pretty common, you know, and until we can have a day where we run into that and still manage to close higher, we're not going to go up anywhere. You know what I mean? Whether it's gold, crude, corn, cattle, whatever it may be. That's the, we're really going to face some headwind here. And so, yeah, I mean, for me, I think, cattle probably trade to the down. It'll be seeking support. That'll be the thing, and it could be really ugly until we get there. And I'm glad I'm not a cattle trader right now.
Right now,
it would be fun. I mean, I miss kind of the excitement in the market. We haven't had excitement in the grain market in 4 years now.
You know what the best thing about trading cattle is?
What?
It's only open from 8:30 to 1.
Yeah, it is a beautiful thing. I always am kind of jealous of that. As a hedger, I don't mind the night market, but I know a lot of people, it drives them nuts.
Oh, no,
for me, I just put an order in and go home. I don't care.
Well, right. I mean, again, and of course, there's not that much liquidity at night either, so it's obviously always a little bit of a challenge. So, any last thoughts, Goddess, for our traders and investors out there?
Well, I would definitely not be afraid to own some corn is my last thought. I guess your downside risk is relatively limited for at least the next 6 weeks or so. You know, worst case scenario, we grind down, and test that 360 mark or so, and I think we end up seeing July corn trade $3.90, $3.95, maybe even $4 before Fourth of July. Yeah,
I hope that happens. I hope they don't pull a repeat.
It's not a recommendation.
And of course, we know it's not a recommendation, but it is something that I think can happen, and I would not be surprised to see it go higher. And of course, it's been great to have on our friend Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. But she always brings great information to everybody, and really kind of thinks on the right lines of a real trader, and has just wants to make sure she takes everything. So always great to have her on. And of course, you know, we'll see what the times bring, but I certainly believe that the grains are going to be strong, and I believe the meats are going to weaken out a little bit here. But for the longer term, I think you're going to see better prices and better things happening in the long run. And I think that's something that's important to kind of understand, and hopefully we'll see it. But this is the way the markets kind of react, and they're kind of waiting on something, just like the equities. In the meantime, this is the Bubba Show, when we just spent the day with Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And of course, make sure you go to bubbatrading.com and check out the Bubba's Bottom Line, which is a lot of fun to do, and I think you'll enjoy it. I get to get a little more passionate about some of the things. You get to see my eyeballs when I do that. But anyways, everybody have a great day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, and we'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.